Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock back again with you on this Thursday edition. My guest is Eric Crocker, former professional cornerback, and it's coming onto the show today to talk cornerbacks, draft prospects, how he sees them ranked at the top, maybe some sleepers in this draft for the 49ers. Quick reminder, you can find this podcast on all of your favorite podcast apps. Don't forget to tune in to tomorrow's kickoff episode of the Locked On NFL Mock Draft Special. You can hear episode one right here on the Locked On 49ers channel, but you'll have to tune in to Locked On NFL to get the rest of the mock draft, including the 49ers picks. It will be running all next week on Locked On NFL. You can find me on Twitter at BD Peacock. You can find my guest today, Eric Crocker, at Eric_Crocker. And now, let's talk corners. Joining me today is a friend of the show, a guy I love talking ball with, and who's been doing a ton of work pre-draft on prospects that could fit for the 49ers, and that is Eric Crocker. And Eric, I got to say, it's not often I get a chance to talk draft with a guy who was once the number one overall pick in a draft. So Eric, thank you for coming on the show once again.
Yeah, number one in an arena football draft, but yes. We got to make sure we're clear about that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't say NFL. It wasn't the NFL draft. It was the arena draft. But hey, I've not even been number one. I've never had the number one draft pick in Madden when we're doing the when we're drafting teams back in the day with my buddies. So, yeah, that's
You know,
that's
the
awesome.
Funny thing about that is I had no idea. So a buddy reached out to me and was like, hey, man, you know you were the number one overall pick in this draft. I was like, what draft?
Oh, that's amazing.
So I didn't even know.
It was not televised then?
Nah, so I'm not even exactly sure how they did it, but I know I played with San Antonio in 2012, and then from there I went to the New York Jets. And I was supposed to, when I had got released, I was supposed to go back to San Antonio, but I told them I wouldn't go and that I just wanted to be, you know, free or whatever. So it turned out to where I was able to go into a draft. And next thing I know, I get a phone call from a buddy and he kind of told me what happened. Yeah, I had no idea.
And that was San Jose. So that was it was an expansion draft.
No, that was
right?
Portland.
Oh, that was Portland.
I got drafted to Portland.
Okay. And then when did you end up in San Jose?
The year after that. So with Portland, I just signed a 1-year contract because I wanted to be able to kind of like maximize the money I was able to get. And I kind of did like a bet on myself type thing.
Yeah.
To where, you know, it was like, hey, like, you know, I know what I'm capable of and I know, you know, I can kind of take this to the next level if this is where I have to play. So, I went number one and I ended up having 11 interceptions that year. So I was one of the top free agents in the following season and I ended up getting a big payday.
Nice. Yeah. And then won the chip, right? You won the championship.
A big payday relative to Arena League contracts. and yes. Arena Bowl championship, and that was my last year I played. So, went out on a high note.
That's awesome. Heck yeah, number
one. And that
was
by choice. That was by choice. I just, you know, it's exhausting, man. You know, we see all these athletes, and you know, we're going to talk about the draft today. And there's a lot of guys that won't get drafted. There are a lot of guys that'll go undrafted, and you know, they'll bounce around from, you know, around the NFL, around different leagues, IFL, CFL, you know, and try to, you know, make their way and make a living for their family. And it kind of gets exhausting, even though, you know, it's fun. You have a good time while doing it. You make some solid money, typically, no matter what league you're in. But, you know, at the end of the day, man, you know, my kids were getting older and, you know, it was kind of just, I just said, you know what, it's time to walk away.
Yeah. And your story, I think you've told your story about the Jets training camp and how that was and with Rex Ryan and then finally getting cut at the end of camp. And it's crazy how guys who, and who knows how things go. Maybe if there wasn't a numbers crunch at one position, maybe you hang on a little bit longer. Maybe you make a play in practice. Maybe you stick longer. And it's crazy how for the end of a roster and guys that are fighting for some of those last spots, how life is for those players and bouncing around. And you see guys who are on seven teams over the course of 3 years bouncing around from this practice squad to this practice squad. They're in training camp here. They end up over here. That's got to be exhausting.
Well, I think the thing that I realized the most, and my brother would tell you because he watched every practice, I could have played on that team. Like, I could have played. There wasn't a big difference between me and, you know, the third, fourth, fifth, sixth corners on the roster. You know, a lot of it's just kind of timing and, you know, we've seen that, right, with Raheem Mostert on the 49ers, where a guy that bounced around, you know, seven different teams, and next thing you know, he's starting in the Super Bowl. A lot of people think that just because you're on the bottom of the roster, like, you can't play. And that's definitely not the case. A lot of times it's just, you know, right time, right place. You know, you obviously the better, you know, position that you come into the league with, you know, a higher draft pick or whatever, you're just going to get more opportunities to kind of showcase your abilities. And, you know, for anybody out there that's still playing ball, you know, you want to put yourself in the best position possible. So you have a little bit more room for error, I guess you could say, because it's tough at the bottom, man. It's tough.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it's just roster politics. One guy has a certain contract and he gets to stick and he was drafted high and the undrafted free agent gets to, you know, fight on the practice squad or gets cut completely. So it's wild. The life of, I love to hear that perspective from you too. Cause sometimes us sitting over here, I'm sitting in a cushy room here talking about football. I'm like, oh, cut this guy. These are human beings. This is real life. These guys are fighting for jobs. And, it's real easy to say that, but, sometimes it's nice to take a step back and hear the story and hear what it's actually like for the players that are in that moment and fighting for jobs.
Yeah. Think about it like this. You have Emmanuel Mosley too. A year ago, he was released. And, you know, luckily for him, you know, he was able to sign back to the practice squad. And, you know, he went from that to ending the season on IR to starting in the Super Bowl the following year. So, you know, were all, you know, six cornerbacks that made the roster the year before just better than him? No. A lot of times it's just a numbers thing. And, you know, oh, well, maybe we can stash this guy on the practice squad, even though he's equally as talented. But the other guys, like the, you know, Witherspoons and the Richard Shermans and, you know, Kawan Williams, guys that they've invested more money in, they're just going to get those. They're going to get the first crack, you know, at it. Terry Vargas Moore, he was a guy that they drafted third round and played cornerback. Like, he was just going to be there. And it wasn't that Mosley wasn't better than those guys or couldn't play at a higher level. It just was the hand that he was dealt. And I think that's the part that kind of gets lost in this thing, man. So people look at practice squad guys and think, oh, well, they're on a practice squad because they can't play. Or they're not as good as the guys in front of them. And it's like, oh, that's not always true.
Right. Just need that opportunity. And some guys get a break, some guys don't. And I'm glad you brought up Emmanuel Mosley, because that was one of the moments when I was like, okay, Crocker knows his stuff, because you were breaking down that draft class. And those were, that was 2018 draft, right?
Yeah.
2018 draft. And undrafted free agent went back and looked at some of those players. And Tarvarius McFadden was the headliner there, and they gave him a bigger bonus to sign as an undrafted free agent. And you were like, nah, Mosley's the guy. It's not McFadden. It's Mosley. And that turned out to be very true. And it's wild to see what kind of workout numbers he had, what kind of player he was. He had good tape at Tennessee. How does he go undrafted? And it's like, you see this talent. Now, finally, he gets a shot. And it's like, okay, now he's a starting corner in the NFL. And 49ers might need to figure out how to pay him, because he's going to be a free agent after the season.
Yeah, it's really weird, you know, and, like, you know, it's not like he just woke up out of nowhere and couldn't play. You know, he could always play. He always had the versatility, you know, even last year when he was a rookie going into training camp. You know, he was, you know, playing on the outside, you know, playing ahead of guys like Tarvarius McFadden. And then in the third unit, he would slide down to the nickel spot. You know, he was doing a lot of the same things that he's doing now. He had an opportunity for, you know, a guy, you know, Witherspoon went down with an injury. Verrett got, you know, toasted at back-to-back plays. And next thing you know, you find yourself in there. And clearly he's made the most of that opportunity. And when Witherspoon kind of started tapering off towards the end of the season, the team, the coaches, they had, you know, the utmost respect for him and confidence in him that he'd come in and be able to do the job. And then, again, in a playoff game, on the biggest stage, they didn't hesitate to pull Witherspoon. They put him right in there, man, on the biggest stage that he could be in, divisional round playoffs, man, and he did his thing.
More with Eric Crocker, how he sees some of the cornerbacks and cover guys at the top of the draft and maybe some sleepers later on. We should start with this, actually, because I think we need to rank the need. Like, what is this draft need for the 49ers at the cornerback position? Because if you look at the current roster, I think people from the outside looking in think, oh, Witherspoon is a bust, and who's this Mosley guy? He can't be the starter. So the 49ers have to draft a corner in the first round because they need a starter. Now, I look at the roster and I think, I'm fine with Sherman for another year. He's on the last year of his contract. Mosley's going to be a restricted free agent. Those guys can start all day for me in 2020. I'm not worried about that. I like the depth of Witherspoon. We'll see what he looks like coming out of training camp. I think he's a nice depth piece. For me, it's depth now, but it's a future starter because Witherspoon's a free agent. Sherman's a free agent. Mosley's a restricted free agent. Kaywan Williams is a free agent, and Jaquaski Tartt's a free agent. So they got to do something to build some depth so they don't have to replace all those guys at one time next year.
Right. I think that's the bigger thing, right, next year. And, you know, if you have an opportunity at 13 to draft in, you know, quote-unquote elite talented player, you know, like a Henderson or, you know, a Kuda if he failed. I know most people don't think he will. Or even if 49ers so happen to trade back and draft a guy like Fulton, you wouldn't have to be in a rush to kind of get that guy on the field. Obviously, you if you're in a Super Bowl window, you want to draft guys that are going to, you know, contribute right away. But, you know, cornerback is a position to where, hey, you know, we can kind of take our time, get this guy ready towards the end of the season, start phasing other guys out, start him, and next thing you know, you have your two corners, you know, for the next 4 years. And you don't have to pay a guy like Sherman or Witherspoon or, you know, kind of be in a rush to do that. So, you know, or you can kind of go into the next offseason and see how you address it. But cornerback will be a much more pressing need at that point. And whoever you draft 100% has to come in right away and make an immediate impact, because I can't see Sherman coming back as a cornerback. I can't see Witherspoon coming back unless it's something like maybe like Ward, where there's really nothing else out there and maybe they still believe he could play, which I think he could play. He's just kind of up and down. But yeah, cornerback isn't as pressing a need as, like, you know, and we'll talk a little bit about receivers coming up. But I think receivers, because you kind of need that guy. Right. And you lost kind of a guy in Emmanuel Sanders. I think whether it's receiver or maybe right guard, I really think those are the two main positions where I look and say, you know what, those like 100% need to be addressed right now.
Right. No, I totally agree there. The Sherman one is interesting because if this year is the last where you're penciling him in as a starting NFL cornerback, and I'm sure he himself is penciling him in for a long time to be a great player, but if you're the 49ers, you have to be realistic about Sherman, who he is, the age, and, you know, the wear and tear that he's had on his body. And he played it at a pretty high level last year. And if he continues to play that way, then great. Can they continue to pay him what he would cost at that level? And then I'm thinking about, okay, well, if he moved inside, the Niners just locked up Jimmy Ward for a while. And I kind of like, with his size, maybe you see if he'll put on a couple more pounds and play a little strong safety. But then it's like, well, he's making more money than Tartt. So why not just keep Tartt? So I'm not sure if I see a great fit for Sherman to move inside with the 49ers. He might have to go find work elsewhere if the 49ers think he's done at cornerback or close enough to being done at cornerback where they don't want to re-sign him after this year.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are thinking about free safety move, but a strong safety move where he'd, you know, be able to play a little bit more in space down around the line of scrimmage, matchup against tight ends. You know, he's a great tackler. He's always been a really good tackler, even though he's a little bit longer. And leaner, his tackling ability has been really on point. But, you know, to kind of be in that area and be able to use his eyes and use his route reading concepts, you know, like his ability to be able to do that, I think strong safety, man, I mean, I think that would be like an ideal position for him right now, you know, where he's not the fastest of guys and maybe not a pure cover guy, but still has coverage skills. I think that would actually make 49ers defense a little bit more dangerous and present a little bit more matchup problems when they line up against opposing teams.
It would be fun to watch him play safety because of his mind and how smart he is. That would be, I think, an ideal fit for him. And I think he could play a long time if he does want to play safety. And I wonder when that's going to happen for him. But he's still playing at a pretty high level at corner. So I think this year, he's going to be the corner on the left side for the 49ers. And we pretty much know who the starters will be unless the draft falls in a way that I don't think it will, and they ended up drafting a corner at 13 and 31, which is definitely possible. And if they did, Croc, now it's time to put you on the spot. I don't know if you've got your official list and your official rankings. I know I saw your official wide receiver rankings that we will get to later on this podcast on another day, but cornerback rankings, you surprised some people when you said that you might have CJ Henderson above Jeffrey Okuda at the top of your list, because everyone in the world has Okuda at the top. And I understand why you would have said that. Do you still feel that way? Let's start there at number one. Who's your number one right now?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to really put out my like official cornerback rankings yet, because I really want to dive into it and really give everything a second. Look, I've been like diving into the receivers so tough over the last couple weeks. But I will say this, as far as, you know, CJ Henderson compared to Jeffrey Okuda, I've been on record of saying that I think Okuda is maybe the cleanest cornerback prospect I've seen in the last few years. And what I mean by that, you know, from a, you know, press man, off coverage, zone eyes, press bail, tackling ability, he just does everything extremely, extremely well. The reason why, especially initially, you know, I had a guy like CJ Henderson over Okuda is because Henderson also has really good tape. And while he had a couple missteps this season, I just believe in, you know, like when we're looking at prospects, we're also looking at like ability and what do we think that this guy really can be. And I think when you look at Henderson, all he needs to do is clean up a step here or a step there. And we're talking about elite, elite talent, elite coverage ability, elite hips, elite feet. You know, he's not the greatest of tacklers, but he is, he can tackle. He just kind of chooses when he wants to be more assertive with it. But he has all the ability in the world. So those guys, they're really neck and neck for me. There's one guy that I feel like just has the higher end elite traits and has the ability to cover any type of receiver anywhere on the field. He did it against Ja'Marr Chase from LSU, a receiver that's one of the top receivers in the nation this year. You know, he's a true sophomore. And Henderson followed him around and played him extremely well, whether it was on the left side, right side, in the slot. I mean, he had really sticky coverages, gave up a touchdown early in the red zone. And that was one thing where I'm like, well, can I fix this? And it's like, well, yeah, just, hey, don't take that one step backwards, make him flatten off his route, and you're good there. And those are the, kind of some of the things that we haven't really had to tell Okuda. But, hey, if I can get, you know, Henderson to kind of buy in and be able to kind of fix up something like that, you know, we're talking about elite man coverage skills. Now, as far as it pertains to the 49ers, I think Okuda is far and away the better prospect for the 49ers because just the defense that the 49ers play, a lot more press bail. They do play some single high man, but they also play a lot of, you know, some cover three things where you have to like read concepts and kind of squeeze. And I don't want to sound like I'm overreacting here, but I think Okuda is next to Josh Norman that year that the Panthers went to the Super Bowl. I think Okuda is the best press bill zone reading cornerback I've ever seen. He's really that good with his anticipation of when guys are going to sit down their routes, when the squeeze stuff, he really, it processes extremely quick for him. He's typically really on point with where his eyes should be. It's extremely impressive to really see and kind of see it play out on film. And that's one of those things. It's like, well, can I get Henderson to play with that same type of anticipation? That's something I don't know. But the way I look at it is if I can, then, you know, that's a better prospect. So that's kind of how I look at those two guys.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I like that you mentioned clean with Okuda because and I like the confidence, too. He's like a finished product. It's not hard to see how he's going to fit into an NFL defense. And I'm sure it makes GMs and coaches feel very comfortable with drafting him very high, which is why he's going to be the top corner on the board. But CJ Henderson, with his ability and his speed and his sticky man coverage, you know, ability and that tool set is something that NFL teams really like. And who knows, maybe they're both gone before the 49ers pick. And in all likelihood, it would be Henderson and not Okuda that would be there if the 49ers wanted to go to that position at pick 13. One thing here before we get to some of these other cornerbacks is I'm thinking about Robert Saleh. And there were teams that talked to him about a head coaching job this offseason. I'm sure it'll happen again next offseason if the 49ers defense is really good. If Robert Saleh leaves, I mean, I don't think it's a guarantee that you're going to find another defensive coordinator that runs the exact same scheme. So I wonder if you're the 49ers, maybe should you start thinking about a corner that's more like CJ Henderson? And potentially, if you have a defensive coordinator that comes in and wants to run more man coverage concepts and more just straight up man or maybe cover two, you know, rather than what we've seen with Robert Saleh and that Seattle style cover three defense.
Right. You know, and that's actually really something I've thought about as well. You know, you have a guy who, you know, he runs a very specific scheme and he has kind of tailored it and adjusted with times. You know, there are guys that are, you know, kind of they have more beaters and stuff ready for, you know, that Seattle cover three that the 49ers run, Jacksonville, you know, Atlanta Falcons, the Vikings, they run kind of a different form of it, but, you know, a lot of single high stuff. Well, you offensive coordinators know how to attack it now. And, you know, the funny thing is Kyle Shanahan was really looking for a defensive coordinator that ran that scheme. And I was really surprised by that. And he said that it was a really tough scheme, but it's like, man, the way he destroyed Seattle in that last, in that Super Bowl run for the Falcons, I'm like, man, I'm surprised he really liked that, because he found all the holes in that defense. Well, it seems like a lot of other people are kind of picking up on it too. And I think Saleh has adjusted very well. I think that's what makes him so coveted, you know, as a, not just a defensive coordinator, but just a really good coach that's able to adjust on the fly to certain things. And, you know, whatever coach does step in there, you know, are they going to run the same scheme? Are they going to want the same type of guys? Because, you know, you can look at how the 49ers run things, or you can kind of look at the, you know, the New England Patriots and how they run something totally different. Or even like a Joe Woods, right? Joe Woods, the defense that he came from before he went to the 49ers, I know he got a new job, but yeah. Before he went to the Niners, you know, he was more of a two-high guy and, you know, a lot more man coverage, you know, in that sense. So, you know, all defensive coordinators, even if they're under the same tree, they'll have their different things that they want to do. And I'm really interested to see, hey, do we keep, you know, going after the same type of cornerbacks? But I will say this as well. Mosley isn't that type of cornerback, right? Mosley isn't that
right.
Seattle cover three Press Bell. So it does seem like even Saleh, which I've been preaching it on here. Hey, man, I don't care what coverage or whatever, you know, can you cover? And I think, you know, Emmanuel Mosley is kind of the epitome of that. And he's a guy that had to learn how to play this different kind of scheme on the fly. Well, I hope they go to guys that are a little bit more universal with their movement skills and their abilities, and not just pigeonhole, you know, draft guys to just be a zone, quote unquote, zone scheme cornerback.
Yeah, because it's really difficult to find a corner that fits the length profile for one of these cover three guys and has all that size, that's also really quick and can move laterally and can mirror receivers and is really a lockdown man cover guy. Because now you're talking about Okuda. You're talking about somebody who you have to draft in the top 10 of the draft to find someone who fits all of those things. So you're usually giving up one for the other. And if all of a sudden you bring in a coach and you have all these long cover three type corners, and then you bring in a coach that wants to run a bunch of man and wants quicker corners, now you've got to revamp your entire personnel package on defense. And one thing I do like about Mosley is, if the 49ers lost, let's say the 49ers draft a corner this year, is able to step in and be an outside corner next year, I think Mosley would be a fantastic fit to play the slot too. So I think he's versatile mm-hmm. for scheme, and I think he's versatile for if he plays outside or in the slot if K'Wan Williams does leave after this season.
Yeah, I've actually been thinking about it. I was talking about it last year in the preseason, where it's like, hey, how much do you need K'Wan Williams if you're trying to save money? Because, and he's really good. I don't want to like say, you know, just like, oh, just skip over him, he's not good. I think K'Wan Williams is really good. Especially, he's one of the best slot DBs in the league. But hey, you know, can I have a guy like, you know, Emmanuel Mosley who can play outside and base? And then, hey, if they go three receivers, he can slide inside and you can have your, you know, another outside corner. You know, like a Witherspoon or, you know, Sherman, you know, whatever it is, you know, it's a lot like Chris Harris Jr., right? Chris Harris did that with Denver Broncos, where him and Talib, they started on the outsides. When the teams went to three receiver sets, Chris Harris, he went to the slot, and Roby, the corner, he's on the Texans now, I believe, but Roby would step in at on the outside corner. And, you know, I think Emmanuel Mosley, I'm not saying that he's Chris Harris, but I think he has some of those same type of abilities and position versatility.
Right, and being inside and close to the line of scrimmage and being a slot corner, having a little bit of toughness and you can tackle is important. We've seen that with K'Wan Williams, and I think Mosley has that as well. I do want to get to some of these other corners here, and likely the 49ers don't take one at 13, I think, but maybe at 31, or maybe if they trade down from 31 into the second round area. Croc, I know you have a favorite. We'll get to that, and one of my favorites later in the draft that I think you like too. You don't have to say your exact order, but who are you looking at those guys after that top two that you would like to see in a 49ers uniform?
Well, I really like Christian Fulton, and I like his ability. The draft is funny, so I don't want to say, oh, he won't be there at 31. You know, you see that a lot on Twitter, like, that guy won't be there. And it's like, man, you just never know. You never know how to draft
yeah.
Fulton.
Absolutely.
But I really do like Christian Fulton. Really good press man guy. The tough thing about guys coming from LSU, they don't play a lot of off coverage or a lot of zone. So, you know, you'd have to kind of see how he would fit in a sense there and kind of how much versatility he has. But as far as a man press coverage guy and with his movement skills, that's what I kind of value the most when I'm first evaluating guys. I think he's right there at my number three spot. And then, or that's where he's been at my three spot. And then after him, you know, there are guys, oh man, you know, there's AJ Terrell from Clemson.
Yeah, and he's got length. He had a great work. Here's another thing I think about this cornerback class, and I think it hurts the cornerback prospects the most. The guys that worked out at the combine and worked out well are going to have a huge advantage, and I think those are the players we're going to see go in round one. And Fulton is one of those. AJ Terrell ran a 4.42, and he's 6'1". He's got length. He had a bad game. Not even a bad game, but he didn't have his best game in prime time against LSU, and I think a lot of people remember that, but he's a really good player. I would be shocked if he doesn't go in round one. Guys like Trevon Diggs, Bryce Hall, there's a few others that didn't run 40 times. I think it's going to hurt them, and I think that solidifies that they will be the ones that fall. And one quick thing on Christian Fulton possibly being there at 31, he was suspended for he got suspended for 2 years, then got reinstated. He had somebody else give a fake urine sample for him because he had smoked pot and knew he was going to get caught for it. But then he got busted for the PED version, or it basically is way worse than if he got caught with pot, having someone else pee in a cup for him, basically. And, you know, so there's some background stuff, and some teams might shy away from him. So there's a chance that Christian Fulton does fall, even though I'm with you. I think he's easily the third best corner in this draft.
Yeah. And wow, you know, I didn't know those things. So, and that's one thing too, to kind of take into account when I do my evaluations. I don't know, like, you know, whether it's off the field or, you know, some injury concerns that people might have, how medical stuff checks out. Like, those are things I don't know. I just kind of watch the film and I kind of go from there. But that's a big deal, you know, with knowing, you have to know, you know, who am I getting? Am I getting someone that has to go through things? And, you know, you're going to have some players like that, right? They're a little edgier and whatnot. But you don't want to do it to where it hurts the team, kind of like what we've seen from Reuben Foster, you know, a guy that we took really high. Like you would much rather have a guy like Tyrann Mathieu, who's extremely talented. He had his off the field issues, but hey, we took him in the third round. So we know we're getting a terrific prospect, and we'll just kind of see how it plays out. And obviously during those times, you know, he was very good for the Cardinals, and, you know, he just made the all decade team. So, you know, it's kind of turned around for him. With Fulton, you know, if those are issues that people might have concerns with, you just hope that he kind of gets more on the straight and narrow and doesn't end up, you know, in a situation like Reuben Foster.
Yeah, and again, it's the human element. What kind of person are you getting? Do they work hard? Are they going to squeeze every drop of talent out of their bodies? And those are usually going to end up being the best players, even if they're a tick slower or a tick smaller. Speaking of that, Jeff Gladney, super scrappy cornerback, Jalen Johnson, they're both, you know, not supreme height, weight, speed athletes, but they're really good. They're being talked about in that first round equation. And then there's a couple of other guys I want to get your opinion on that are probably second round types, maybe even into the third round, with Bryce Hall and Trevon Diggs. Those guys did not get a chance to work out before the draft. How do you like those players?
Yeah, so Bryce Hall, man, he's a guy who I like his film. There's something about him. There's this kind of stiffness, and it's kind of hard for me to put my finger on, but he has good, like, I like him from press. I think he's very solid, and there are some things that he can clean up. I think from off coverage, he's maybe one of the best that I've seen outside of Okuda, from, you know, just kind of being in the off. Even he plays a lot of, like, off man, where Okuda plays a lot of off zone, but he plays his off man, and he, like, lets the receiver kind of eat his cushion and breaks on routes, and it looks really, really good. And I know how tough that is, so I really kind of have a different level of appreciation for a cornerback that's able to do that, kind of what he does. I don't know about his long speed. And like you said, you know, he wasn't able to test. He broke his, like, ankle, and it was really nasty. I saw a picture of it. I knew he had got hurt, and I knew it was like a lower body injury, but I saw a picture of it, and it was really gross. It was like his bone was, like, sticking out, almost like a, yeah, it was gross. Like, you could see, like, his foot, like his cleat, and then you look at his ankle, and it looked really bad.
Yeah.
So that was a tough injury. So he didn't run at the combine. I want to say that, you know, he's recovered from that, and, you know, he's fine now. But again, we don't know how fast he is. And from what I'm hearing, I had a coach that played against him. I get these random, like, DMs now of people, like, kind of giving me, like, input.
Nice.
And it's actually pretty cool, I guess, for people to kind of, like, you know, reach out to me and, like, kind of tell me these things. But the one thing that this coach said about him was, he's a safety or a nickel at the next level. He doesn't have the long speed. So that was kind of the insight I got on Bryce Hall. But, I mean, last year I think he was a guy that would have been my, like, CB1 if he had came out in a class that wasn't as strong. And I do think that he is a guy that kind of could fit what the 49ers do and doesn't have to be just a pure, you know, press man guy like maybe the New England Patriots would ask him to be.
Yeah, I mean, the prospect you're explaining right now sounds a lot like Richard Sherman when he's coming out of Stanford, right? He's got ball skills. He's smart. He's long. Maybe you worry about the top-end speed and the high-end athleticism. And that's, I mean, that seems like a perfect fit for the 49ers defense if he's healthy and recovered from that, and if he's not just completely stiff out there as a cover guy. But with those smarts, maybe he could eventually move inside if he's not a fit. So, you know, if he's still there in the third round because of that injury, because he hasn't been able to work out, I'm all on board with Bryce Hall, and I love everything you're saying about him there. I know there's one guy that we have to end with here that we need to talk about, because you've been on Twitter recently singing the praises of the other corner from Ohio State that played across from Jeffrey Okuda, and you think he'd be a fantastic fit for the 49ers.
Yeah, man, Damon Arnette. I really like his game, and I think he's going to slide. I hear that there were some off-field issues. Again, I had somebody randomly message me about this guy and say he doesn't have off-field issues. He was just a little immature at times, but not anything like that's too crazy. You know, he's not like beating up people or anything like that. At least that's what kind of the tech, that was the message I got. But as far as his game goes, I mean, when you look at those two corners, man, they play off each other extremely well. It kind of reminds me of like Richard Sherman and Byron Maxwell, right? When Maxwell was just kind of playing out of his mind for Seattle, yeah, playing very well, earned a big paycheck going to, I think, the Eagles or the Dolphins or wherever he went first. Maxwell Arnette is a guy that definitely has really good ability, really good man press guy. I think where he kind of lacks is his off coverage. He doesn't have the same type of anticipation. And when you're watching him and Okuda on the same film, it kind of jumps out. Now, again, is that something, can you teach him to play with a little bit more urgency, or just does he not have the ability to kind of really explode out of his breaks? Because that's kind of something that jumped out time and time again to me, where it's like, man, he's not really exploding. I think it has something to do with his eye discipline, but it was something that I saw happen a little bit more times than I would like. And that was from off coverage. But from man press, he was really scrappy. I thought he was one of the best man press corners in this class. And he didn't run a fast 40. He ran a 4.56. And for your corners, you ideally, if especially the higher you're going to take them, you run better. That's not necessarily a good time for a corner, but it's not terrible. We've seen worse. We've seen guys kind of work out that ran worse. Josh Norman, Tremaine Johnson, they ran in the 4.6s. But I really like his ability. I really like his demeanor on the field, kind of a cockiness, I'd say, and his aggressiveness to get in there and really want to hit guys, really want to throw guys off blocks, go in there, stick his head in there and get dirty. Those were things that I really appreciated about his game. I think with him, it's just, you know, he has short arms too. I think that's something that's going to be a knock on him when it comes to NFL guys. Me, you know, hey, man, if you can cover, you can cover. And he broke up a lot of passes. But he has 30-inch arms. His arm length is 30 inches. That's one of the lowest I've, like, ever seen. So that's not ideal. But he has good size. You know, he's 6 foot, 195 pounds. And, yeah, again, I really like the way he plays. I think he's somebody that's going to be there third round. Somebody messaged me and said, oh, man, I think he's going to be there, like, fourth round. But we'll kind of see where he goes. But I know the 49ers don't have those mid-round picks. If they did, he'd be a guy that the 49ers should be interested in.
Yeah, and that's a bad combination if you are, if you run 4.57, I think is what his 40 time was, and maybe have some off-field concerns for teams. It might be a little bit harder for teams to vet right now with the situation that front offices are in and scouts are in and maybe a little bit less information. Maybe someone like that does fall a little bit toward where the 49ers are around round five. Are there any other late-round names before I let you go, Eric? Talking corners here, any late round guys that might be there for the 49ers early in round five if they're not able to trade down and add a pick on day two?
Yeah, so there's this one guy, man, and his name is kind of picking up steam, but again, I don't have like sources. I don't want to come off like, oh man, I'm just some kind of like insider, right? I'm not that. But somebody did message me, I guess maybe it's my the breakdowns of these guys. I don't know what it is. Actually, this was before I even knew who this guy was or heard of him. Somebody from that university that's on staff there messaged me and they're like, hey, man, you need to take a look at these guys that I have here at Tulsa. And Robinson was one of them. Robinson, yeah. Reggie Robinson III from Tulsa. Big cornerback, length. Has all the ability, tested extremely well at the combine, ran like 4.44, I believe, or something like that. And so, you know, I watched his film and he was someone where his movement skills don't really leap out at me. But I think it was kind of comparable to like a Trevon Diggs, but just at a smaller, you know, conference on a smaller team. So, you know, he has similar size. He was like 6'2", like 200 pounds or something like that. He was a big, let me look up exactly how big he is, but he's a really good size.
I have it right here. And yeah, 6'1", 205, and 4'4".
Yeah. See, so, I mean, that's terrific size. I think, you know, if the 49ers stick with this type of scheme, I think he's like one of the guys that's like perfect where, you know, he kind of at least, at the very least, kind of gives you that little wiggle room to not have to reach for a cornerback. Well, I don't want to say reach, but draft a cornerback first round and kind of figure out what you're going to do with him. He could be a guy where, okay, we got him in the fifth round and hey, now, you know, we don't have to start him right away. We can kind of ease him in and kind of see how he progresses. And if he's a guy we like, we know next year, we don't really have to go all in on a cornerback. So I think like, you know, in the later rounds, he's a guy. And then one other guy, man, Parnell Motley from Oklahoma. He did not test well at all. I wouldn't be surprised if he was a guy that went undrafted, man. But when you put on Oklahoma film, his ability just jumps off. He's not the biggest guy. He's like 5'11", 180 something or something like that. He ran a 4.5 and a 4.53 hand time at his pro day. Wasn't invited to the combine. Had a, like a 30-inch vertical or 31-inch vertical. I mean, it was just terrible. So he might not even get drafted. But I tell you what, man, the dude has coverage skills. He can play.
There you go.
And that's
I love
a guy
it.
That I would definitely look to bring in a later round. You know, the 49ers have some late seventh-round picks to where it's like, hey, you know, we just kind of want this guy instead of having to bid against other guys as an undrafted free agent and really kind of lock him into more of a four-year contract instead of a three and, you know, unrestricted or restricted free agent. He'd be a guy that I would take late rounds. He can play. He can play.
I love it, man. Those are some good names. Robinson and Motley late in the draft. Robinson's the one I keep putting in mock drafts to. And I the more I watch him, I'm like, is he even going to be there really in the fifth round? I have my doubts when he got the combine invite, which is a good sign, ran well at the combine, has size. I have a feeling he's not even going to be there in the fifth round. That'll be disappointing.
Yeah, but, I have that same feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. That is Eric Crocker. Love the information, Eric. Thank you so much for joining me today talking cornerbacks. We're going to do it again next week talking wide receivers. Thanks so much, man.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me.